Well, Bill Gates has predicted that within 10 years, we will all be working 2 days a week thanks to the magnificence of artificial intelligence that is going to free up so much of our life so we have this work-life balance that we have all been craving since the 1930s when John Maynard Keynes said exactly the same thing. And he's not the only one. Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JP Morgan, has pitched in as well. He says 3.5 days a week within the next 5 to 10 years. That's the amount of time that we'll all be working. This is, again, saying this is a win for the workers because of the work-life balance. Mm. This is the same CEO of JP Morgan who at the moment is telling everyone that they would be wasting their time if they were to try and angle for a work from home and everyone has to be in the office 5 days a week. That's his contribution to work-life balance. But just hang on there because we'll all only be working 2 to 3.5 days a week. But Steve, I mean, it was what was said by John Maynard Keynes in the 1930s. I remember learning about that at school and being very excited that I wouldn't have to work very hard through my life. How did that work out? We are more stressed than
brilliantly.
Ever.
I get ribbed from getting the occasional forecast wrong, but I reckon that I can't compete with John Maynard on that one.
So what went wrong? How was he so wrong? I mean, it seems at the one level, it's very straightforward, isn't it? If you are told you only need to work 2 days a week, but you can work 5 days a week and earn 2.5 times the amount of money, you'll go, good, I'll work 5 days and I'll have more money. Thank you very much. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, which is not how it worked out either. I mean, it's a classic of ignoring the power relations in capitalism because, yes, if we had a society where, you know, we'd organized in what we tend to call a democratic way, then, yes, we'd all share the benefits, yada, yada, yada. Instead, what we have had was power relationships that dominate, and it's not the workers who decide how many hours they work a week, it's the capitalists, and none of this stuff emanated out because the power distribution shifted dramatically from workers at the end of the World War II to the capitalists over the next 20 years, with mainstream economics playing a major role in that political shift, and then we've all found ourselves working harder. And one argument which I think it's quite sound. It might sound sexist, but it's quite sound, I think. If you look back in the 1940s and 50s, when at that time we had, you know, institutionalized sexism in the workplace.
Yeah.
And
I know exactly where you're going with this. Yeah.
The women coming to the workforce increased the supply of labor and reduced the price.
Yeah. And so all of a sudden, this is not us because we're both saying exactly the same thing or trying. We are treading carefully around saying that actually women in the workforce has made it worse for everybody in a way, in that now we have to have two people in a household working to pay for a house, whereas before we managed to get by with one.
Yeah, yeah. And so it was, again, that's the power relationship thing. If you had the power set up in such a way that, you know, a democratic, you know, allocation of increase in productivity, yeah, we'd be working less hours and women getting the workforce would mean, you know, the workers spread. Now, obviously, the household work won't be spread fairly. We both know what sexist men still are on that front. Yeah. It's one of my favourites.
Men are still holding out very well on that one, aren't they?
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. I can't say I'm an angel there. It was a power distribution between workers and capitalists again. More workers available, the real wage went down. Mm. Not a straight market phenomenon in that sense, but. And it's the opposite of what happened with the bubonic plague, because if you take a look at the historical records, you see the bubonic plague wiped out about half the workforce. It meant that peasants went from being, peasants are a dime a dozen to peasants are two dime a dozen, and consequently a dramatic increase for a while until the population recovered in the wage going to the poorer members of society who don't normally have power, but reducing the available workforce increased their power. So, you know, it's not getting the power relationships right, and we end up getting screwed at the end.
So, but I mean, John Maynard Keynes's argument was that, you know, mechanization would do so much that we wouldn't need to work as much. Then there's the counter argument that if people are freed from the jobs they were doing before, freed from that work, i.e. made unemployed, they will actually find work doing something else. And actually, by and large, that has happened, isn't it? Because the unemployment rate is still pretty low. We have found other stuff. And so the argument is machines have been, you know, have replaced some jobs, but we've just moved into other jobs. So overall productivity has increased.
Well, you see, I mean, this is why I love Richard Goodwin's growth cycle model, because the argument he made out of that was that technological progress ultimately benefits both workers and capitalists. You have this, but the technological progress only occurs if the workers take a substantial amount of the income. Mm. So it's worthwhile for capitalists to find ways to replace workers with machinery. And then given that causes a cyclical downturn, you then get the bargaining capability when the economy turns up goes back in workers' favour again. So he argued that there was a symbiosis in that sense between workers and capitalists. And this actually comes back to the role of energy in production, which is one thing, of course, the mainstream has no effing idea about. But fundamentally what we're doing is exploiting free energy. It's not that workers are being exploited by capitalists, which is the classic Marxian way of framing things, labour theory of value. It's that we're both socials classes are necessary to exploit the free energy we find on the planet, and then it's a question of relative bargaining powers to how much that goes to workers versus how much it goes to capitalists.
Yeah.
And both political changes in the 40s and 50s that Trump, Keynes tried to stop before he died with the idea of the International Clearing Union and so on. They undermine the bargaining power of workers. So most of the increase in energy exploitation went to benefit the super rich, which is why the super rich are the major contributors to carbon dioxide generation as well as everything else. But the inequality, that's what Keynes didn't factor in, and the shifting power relations. Go back to the post-war period, workers and trade unions were much more powerful than they are now. And there was this capacity to bargain for a share in the product. That's been devastated ever since the 1970s.
So the wage differential will be a big part of the problem, won't it? Because if you've got the uber rich, they will push up the price of stuff. And so stuff that was, affordable for a lot of people all of a sudden doesn't become affordable. So if you make
housing in particular being the major.
Even though you might go, they can afford their five billion or 5 million pound house. Maybe 5 billion soon, but in fact, 5 million seems quite mediocre these days, doesn't it? So their 30 million pound house is actually probably going to, through the chain, push up the price of a 200,000 pound house as well. So everyone loses. I mean, some people would say, no, don't worry about that because they are different markets. Top end of the market is very different to the bottom end of the market. But I don't think it works out like that, does it?
Well, this is why we used to have social housing. Mm. And everything is simply, the poor, unless income distribution shifted in favour of the poor rather than the rich, then the poor can't afford to buy housing. They've got to rent instead. And in fact, we've made that far worse by allowing private banks to lever up the amount of money people borrow. And it's the leverage which has caused the house prices as well, but also the inequality. So all this, Keynes's dream of a future in which workers would be working just 15 hours a week was a fantasy when you put it into the political framework. And that's a major achievement of neoliberalism, is persuading us this is a good idea for everybody. We're all going to grow so much faster.
Well, I went to school in the 70s and 80s. We were still being promised it then. We hadn't given up hope. But I think we have now, haven't we? Because
I think we have.
Look at the numbers. We are stressed as all hell. One in four people in the UK are stressed at work more time than they are not. For women, because women get stressed more easily, they are,
easily. Because they've got the double role.
Exactly. 11.7 stress days per month. In many cases, it's getting down to not enough sleep. And financial stress, this is according to research by Cypher. Who the hell are they? They're an HR solutions company. It might be a survey of 10 people. Who knows? But anyway, we know, generally people are. So much evidence that people are more stressed at work, and yet machines are doing more. And your point that the rich will benefit and the poor less so, but people have moved into other jobs, haven't they? So they've gone from menial work into middle management jobs, where you would have thought, well, where's the stress there? You spend all day in meetings talking about nothing at all, creating your bullshit jobs. And yet people...
That's where the stress...
They get stressed by that.
That stresses people out.
Well, perhaps it stresses them out because in the back of their mind, they know this job is doing nothing at all. So I could easily be replaced.
I've got to drop one of my favourites in that situation. I mean, the student I cucked out of my course, where that ran really well with people recently. But I once got involved in a fight over a small business guy who'd... this is back to the relationship thing as well. My wife insisted on buying a cheap computer rather than an expensive one. the very first marriage. And I bought three machines in a row, all of which failed from one. Literally, the power system just kathunk. Within 24 hours, the first machine died. The next one lasted a day and a half, and the one after that about a day. And I said, take the shit back. Well, you can take it back, but you've got to hang on to this free printer you gave you for 1,500 quid. And I didn't want the printer. The printer was thrown. That's probably why they could get rid of the... They were dumping bad computers with a good printer. So I got involved in a small claims court, and the guy who was doing the selling is a student, small business, dragged along a lawyer because, you know, Keane's got a law degree, this is unfair. And, you know, anyway, the mediator threw the lawyer out, which was quite a lot of fun. We then got involved in a negotiation over it. And he marched up to me at one point and says, here's our offer. And if you don't accept it, I'll hit you with this writ and that writ, and you'll never see your money. And I simply said, mate, I've done a law degree. I know the function of lawyers is to slow down the execution of justice. Now shut the fuck up and let's bargain. And he didn't say another word. I had him in shock because he realized his job was even worse than a bullshit job. Mm. It was there to slow down the execution of justice. So that's an extreme version, but so many people would, you know, be stressed by the fact that what I'm doing is pointless.
Yeah, I see. So if computers are doing that in lightning time, they're not going to be slowing anything down at all. So thank God.
That's right.
Thank God we need humans for that. So McKinsey's reckon that by 2030, well, maybe there'll be no one left at McKinsey's either because people will be able to do these useless reports. But anyway, McKinsey reckon that by 2030, up to 30% of current hours worked would be automated. And in Europe, that would mean 12 million. Is that million or billion? I've mistyped it. No, it can't be billion, obviously. It's not that many people on the planet. So it must be 12 million. 12 million occupational transitions by 2030. So 30% of the hours worked are going to disappear. So what happens? Do you think we do replace those jobs this time? But maybe we don't anymore.
I think this is when I was talking about this stuff back in the 70s and back in my student days, what I argued was that Marx's own vision about what was going to happen under capitalism was he'd be driven into two extreme classes. There'd be the proletariat with virtually nothing, the capitalists with virtually everything, and all skill would be removed. And my argument was, well, actually, what actually happened was the real challenge in capitalism isn't producing what Marx called surplus value. It's flogging the stuff, turning excess, you know, extra goods into actual money. And that's what I call the realization problem. That was the main struggle that capitalism faced. But what actually happened was, because of that struggle, there's a huge growth in the middle class. Mm. So all these jobs turned up in management, marketing, distribution, retail, wholesale trade, et cetera, et cetera. It didn't exist anything like the same scale a century earlier. And that's what absorbed the people who were displaced for manufacturing. Now we've got AI targeting that very type of work, and at the same time we've got robots getting to the point where I think it's quite likely that the dexterity of robots and the capacity to train them to do particular menial jobs, which humans used to do, and purpose-made machines were too expensive. Now that we have general-purpose robots, or that menial manual work's going to go, and the menial internal stuff can disappear as well with AI. So yeah, I think we see a potential huge increase in unemployment, and definitely a reduction in the capacity of people who don't own capital to bargain with capital.
So the argument is always given, although, you know, you make the point about, you know, this is menial work, so will it be replaced by robots? So there's going to be this growing aging population, and we'll need more healthcare workers. And
that's the demographic thing is also an issue. So all these things mean that, you know, what used to be cyclical has now become secular.
Yeah, but those healthcare workers, I mean, we can't fill those jobs currently in the UK, and I think it's the same in most Western developed nations, isn't it? Because nobody wants to do those jobs, which is why we recruit people who are prepared to work for next to nothing from overseas. So if we, you know, we'd have the opportunity to be loads of people domestically to be able to do those jobs if we wanted to, but we don't want to, because who wants to wipe an old person's bottom for a living if you've been working?
And also the bloody pay rates involved. Mm-hmm. This is like I learned this through a relationship where I found proto-relationship, where I found out what an NHS doctor was paid was trivial. And in fact, you could make more money flipping hamburgers at McDonald's. Mm. So it's part of this is a UK phenomenon, just how badly paid health professionals are. And yeah, of course, why spend 6 years getting a degree that'll get you less money than you get from flipping hamburgers?
Yeah.
So, whereas if you meet a migrant, that's an option you didn't have, and you if you do the training in your own country, you come across and you might accept those lousy pay rates, and then you get abused by racist English people. It's an ugly looking future, and my real expectation for the future isn't the 15-hour week, it's the Hunger Games.
How do you mean?
Well, the wealthy are the elite, because it's
the wealthy are going to start killing us one by one. Is that what you're saying?
Well, they don't necessarily have the contest involved in the Hunger Games, but you have this wealthy elite in a small region with ostentatious lifestyles,
yeah,
and the majority living in poverty and sustained by what amounts to a very basic level of basic income, but no more. And so that's, unless we shift the power balance in our political system, then I think that's the outcome we face.
Right, and obviously we're talking the tech billionaires, aren't we now? The Elon Musks of this world who have all weaved their way into politics. It's not just Elon Musk that was sitting there when Donald Trump was elected at his inauguration ceremony. It was all the tech bros were there. So they're all playing politics. They are all trying to change the world beyond their own companies because their egos are so massive and they've got the money to do it. That is the scary thing, isn't it? But if they've got loads of money and the rest of us have got no money, I mean, who are they selling to? We can't afford to buy the stuff they're selling. And so
this is again where the energy issue comes in. If you relied upon the mass market to be able to turn your industry into profit, then you'd have a real serious problem that way. And it's hardly going to be a smooth transition. But if you see it as being basically exploiting free energy, and you've got robots that help you do all the work, et cetera, et cetera, you can ignore the vast mass of the population. In the feudal days, the Black Death, the princes and lords and ladies weren't about to go out and work out in the fields. They had to have the peasants to do the work. But if you can imagine a future world, which is quite feasible, where robots do the work and it's power stations generating the energy input, you don't have to feed them, et cetera, that implies a huge shift in the power balance in favor of those who own capital.
Yeah, two types of power. There's the power that they hold. There's also the use of power. So when we come back, because AI is a big consumer of power, and these are scary numbers that I've got. So when we come back, let's look at that, because that could be the nail in the coffin for AI, actually. If it's, what productivity is that adding for the expense in terms of energy, if we hit a ceiling on that? So we'll look at that when we come back on the Debunking Economics podcast. Stay with us. So we are looking at the 2-day working week that we are all heading to. We're all looking forward to immensely. If it happens, we're still waiting, obviously, since the 1930s when John Maynard Keynes promised exactly the same thing. But it's AI now, Steve, that's going to do it for us. The only problem is, according to the EIA, which is the International Energy Agency, 2% of the world's electricity is currently used for AI. And they expect
2%.
And they expect that's going to double in the next 4 or 5 years. So, 4% of the world's electricity will be used on AI. And then, and then some, I should imagine, as the years go on. Economists would go, that's fine, isn't it, using that, because it is making us so much more productive. So for all of that energy input, what is the productivity we're getting out? But I just wonder whether, because, machines are doing stuff now that humans were doing, but we're not actually killing the humans, are we, when these machines take over? So they are still consuming energy as well. So we've got a bit of double counting, I think, going on here.
Yeah, but, that's a dramatic rise in energy consumption. I mean, the AI wasn't even an industry worth speaking of 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And suddenly it's 2% of bloody global energy.
And it's going to be 4 in 4 years. So in 8 years, is it going to be, is it going to double every couple of years, for example?
This is one of the, AI to build stuff you can make a commercial return out of, fine. AI as a way of doing, Google searches, I think is a huge loss leader for these firms. So I don't expect it to reach the same levels of success that they're extrapolating forward. But the energy consumption is going to, I think, is the Achilles heel of this, as well as Bitcoin. because we're still ignoring it because we still think, you know, global warming is trivial. Just ask experts like William Bloody Nordhaus. Once it becomes obvious that they didn't have a, a clue what they were talking about, then I think when we start hitting in, you know, climate change brick walls, horrific events, in terms of, you know, damage to white, to lots of white people dying, when that starts happening, I think at some point they'll say, okay, AI, anything which has huge energy consumption, which we can potentially do without or cut back, I expect that to be cut back. So I don't see this trend as going on indefinitely because we hit the climate wall before we're going to hit political wall.
Yeah, and what is the productivity actually we are getting from AI? So right now, a lot of it is language models, and it's got the ability to actually produce wordier reports than humans can. You know, we're saying, you know, from what I've seen, the ability to say, okay, I need to report on something, they can, because they have, it has very little information to go on, it pads it out with words and can create a 20-page document that says nothing at all, better than most bureaucrats can. So, but that is, you know, completely useless. But there again, the document was useless when it was made by a human. They're just making useless documents faster.
More useless. Yeah. Improving on what humans can
do. And I'll give you another example, because I just got an update to Microsoft Edge, and it said, hey, we can create a cartoon picture from your photo. So I thought, okay, well, maybe we could use that. We could have a cartoon picture of Steve and I. We could use it for the...
The pandas. You were definitely pandering to a different audience for that, one.
I know.
Did you realise you're going to follow back on that
one? Yeah, I noticed you tried to get that line in last week. So well done for getting it in this week. But
there's
an example as well. I only did it because you could do it. I don't know if it was that good, but it was an example of AI providing no use whatsoever. I mean, I had very little traction in terms of social media.
It was worth a try.
It was worth a shot. Yeah. But anyway, so it said, yeah, we can do a cartoon picture. So I said, okay, well, here's a photograph of me and Dana. Create a cartoon picture of the two of us. And it gave us the similarity is amazing in that one of us was a man and the other one was a woman. Beyond that, and I think it got them the right way around as well. It figured out I was the manager.
You didn't have bigger tits than her, I hope.
Well, no, they were, you see. So it was inaccurate in every way. But the... No. Oh, God. Now I'm in trouble.
Oh, boy. Okay.
At least do that. Anyway.
Should I send roses?
Should I edit that? No, it's too late. So there we are. So, I mean, it's what a complete waste of energy is my point. You know, so I wonder how much of this AI... is just there because we can do it. I'll give you another example as well. For $50, you can buy a Bee Pioneer bracelet, which records everything. It's only audio, but I think there will be video things that you hang around your neck. But this just sits on your arm. It's a bracelet. It records everything. So, and you can play it back, or you can get it to summarize. So you can go, Bee, summarize my day. Or you could come out of a meeting and say, summarize that meeting. But also you could say, Steve said something the other day. Steve came out with a joke. I don't know. It was something to do with pandas. What was it? And it will go back and it will find it and play it back to you. Or more to the point, you know, you had... make it funny. That's right. Or you had a disagreement with your partner or a friend or whatever, or a lawyer. You can, you know, play it back in a court of law, I guess. So no one can.
Oh,
and then you get to the stage where you go, oh my God, everyone is recording absolutely everything in our life. I am scared to say anything. How is that making our life better? But it must be consuming an immense amount of energy because it's all going into a data center, storing all this audio, eventually video, and then searching through it all and doing whatever else we want to, not because it's useful, but just because we can.
And that's the Jevons paradox. And this is one of the areas where, now, one of the people who gave us neoclassical economics is also a decent polymath and could look at energy consumption and say anything which gives us more efficiency ends up having more use. And that's exactly what's going on here. We do it because we have the available energy. If we don't have the available energy, then the whole gravy train falls over. And I think that's going to happen well before we get to the point of, I've seen people talk about artificial general intelligence. I just don't take that seriously. But the amount of energy consumed is huge, and at some point we'll say, well, it's only for things where it really makes sense, like, for example, identifying a new protein that can address a viral attack, that sort of thing, or diagnostic skills. There's going to be areas where AI really does useful stuff, but if AI starts replacing bullshit jobs with bullshit AI, what we're seeing, then it's just a waste of energy.
But all that smart stuff, that's great. But the people who benefit from that, well, society as a whole might benefit from the outcome of it. but the profits made from it are going to still be in the hands of a very small number of people. And the rest of us will be wondering what to do at that time.
And that becomes the whole issue of the power distribution. So if we do survive, if there is a civilization on the other side of what global warming is going to do to us, then this technology will exist. And you could then say, how do you use your technology without destroying the structure of society? How do you use it in a way that it makes society a better place rather than a worse one? So at that point, I think it's going to be potentially this technology could be useful. But as you say, at the moment, if it's just finding a faster way to do what bullshit jobs do, then it's going to displace the people who currently do bullshit jobs, and we end up in the power relationships you see in the Hunger Games.
Yeah, and what do those people who did those bullshit jobs, what do they do now? Just lots of gardening, I suppose, if they can afford a garden, which seems a bit unlikely, actually, because they would be on... we can talk about universal basic income as maybe the replacement, which means the government has to spend a great deal of money, which, classical economists would say, well, we don't have that, but it would be unemployment benefit, which means, to me, it's almost like the same thing. You can call it universal basic income, but most people are unemployed. What we're actually talking about is unemployment benefit. You've got to pay people. We can't let them die.
Well, the capacity of workers to bargain for a share of the income being generated in an economy has based on the fact that they've been critical to getting work done.
Yeah.
Now, if they cease being critical to getting work done in all but a handful of occupations that involve probably high levels of intelligence or high levels of skill in some way that you can't transfer to a machine, then the vast majority of the population is going to be unemployable, not unemployed, but unemployable in that structure. And then if you're going to have a functional society, then what you're trying to do is say, well, we've got to create an income so anybody who can't get work in the current environment because they don't have the skill level or the intelligence level or whatever else still gets enough to stay alive. And then the ones who can do the contribution get a higher income, but that's, dependent upon labor and skill and so on. That's a feasible society. Equally, it can get the point where it's, again, back to the Hunger Games. You have enforcers, and the enforcers would be robots. They wouldn't mind killing humans. The Isaac Asimov thing will not necessarily be built into existing robots. Mm. It'll remain fictional. So, robot enforcers of a world in which the majority can't survive, it could be a very, very ugly future indeed.
Yeah, well, we'll all be dead. So at least we know where we're ending up. But the part of the problem is that we are going into this without control. So, I mean, if we were smart about this, we'd be saying, okay, there's been enough fiction written about where this all goes. There's got to be some truth in all of that fiction. So we've got to start introducing
Brave New World, 1984.
And so on. So we need to
keep the Aspidistra flying.
Yeah, the Terminator.
Space merchants.
Yeah. So we need to
Terminator. That's the real classic one.
So we need to introduce the controls to make sure this doesn't get out of hand. But we are doing the complete opposite. We're actually saying no.
Deregulate.
We need to deregulate so that these industries can grow. And as America says, we want to deregulate. Everyone else is going, well, we're going to deregulate faster. So this thing goes out uncontrolled with uncontrolled profits, profiteering, more money, sapping up more energy. So, for example, what was the percentage Microsoft paid? And we all know, I haven't got the figure to hand, next time you're talking, I'll get it. But we all know these tech companies are paying very, very low levels of taxation. Actually, it was Nvidia, that's right, because they received so many tax incentives in recent years because of this push to get AI out as fast as possible. Nvidia has had several years where its effective tax rate is less than 2%. So rather than saying, well, actually, all the work that you're doing is going to make us lose jobs, we need to, it's going to completely transition society. The benefits that you're receiving in terms of the money that you're making from this transition, you're going to have to pay very heavy tax, 50, 60, 70%, because we need to transition the whole of society. We're not saying that. We're saying, no. 2% will do. We'll give you a few government grants. Just keep it in America.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're going about it all wrong.
We are. I mean, this is one reason Gary Stevenson's argument in favor of wealth tax makes sense, because it's extremely easy for the rich to evade income tax. I think I've mentioned before my trip to the Cayman Islands and going to a News Limited's most profitable venture, and it was a two-story whitewash building with 30 other company names on brass plaques outside, nobody home, and that's where Rupert made most of his money. Yeah. Ha, ha, ha. So income taxes can be evaded easily. Wealth taxes are harder. So something which taxes wealth might stop that to some extent.
But also the companies themselves. We should just be going, half the money you make has got to go to the government to counteract the impact on society of the work that you're doing.
This comes down to the fact that these, these virtual monopolies succeed because of the network effect. Once there's a search engine that works, everybody uses that same search engine, and breaking in is extremely hard. So in the old days, it was Yahoo. It's been Google ever since. And it's only because everybody uses it that it has that capability in the first place. Mm. So to some extent, you've got a justification to say it's the mass of people who use you who make your value, therefore part of your revenue should go back to the mass of the people, not just to the owners of Google. But then that sort of thing, to get a political shift like that, I think will take a shock like World War II. Because one thing I remember vividly as a school student was learning the White Paper on Employment, published in Australia in 1945 by Nugget Coombs. And that the expression in that about in government policy, and this is under a conservative government at the time in Australia, and they accepted the White Paper, it became government policy, quote-unquote, to maintain such pressure on employment as to guarantee a shortage of men rather than a shortage of jobs. So that was the orientation. Now, who gives a fuck if people get unemployed, it's their fault, et cetera, et cetera.
And yet unemployment rates, it's so far unemployment, it may change over coming years, but the unemployment rate in most of the Western world is actually very low. I mean,
there's a large amount of displaced employment, people,
driving cabs. There's lots of gig
people
jobs.
On welfare. Mm. I mean, because they have, health damages, and at the same time pushing up the bloody retirement age.
Yeah.
I'm not a manual worker, but I wouldn't be using this hand to do manual labour. I can't close the fist anymore. Arthritis is striking. So there's so many ways in which what we've set up is stuff designed by privileged white people who haven't had to do manual labour, and they're then saying let's make the retirement age 70 for manual labourers.
So this power dynamic is scary, the scary part of all of it, though, isn't it? That not the consumption of power, that's scary within itself. And as you say, we might reach a ceiling on that. But the fact that the power that is controlled by this small handful, and we've spoken about it, obviously, with the Yanis Varoufakis in a fairly recent episode as well, the tech bros are wielding so much control over the world and are stepping into politics as well. So we're not going to get regulation because they're there making sure that doesn't happen. And so we are all powerless because we don't even have political control anymore. We get the vote, but somehow our vote will be influenced by social media, which is controlled by the same people.
And the vote is the same. You get to choose which Tweedledee and which Tweedledum do you want to be in control.
Yeah.
And this is the whole point that Samuelson made decades ago. He didn't care who drafted a country's laws so long as he could write its economics textbook. So, the Tories in the Labour Party running the UK right now are very similar to the Tories in the Tory Party, because they both read from the same hymn book. So we have political systems that aren't designed to represent the power of the majority. They end up being, following the same script as the economy itself.
And where do we end up through all of this? It is a sad dystopian world, isn't it? I'm trying to find a positive light in all of this, but I feel like you get a bunch of people who can't work anymore. And I'm quite glad I'm just coming out for 61. If I can make enough to live off in my time by the time I'm 70, hopefully I'll evade the worst of this. And also, I'm completely replaceable by artificial intelligence. All they need to do is take me and add the intelligence.
All the jokes. Yeah. Just put the jokes in somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah. They'll be funnier. They'll be smarter.
And the pseudo numbers.
Smarter observations. There'll be something much more pleasant to look at. I mean, why am I still here, actually, quite frankly? Talk about living on borrowed time. But we get to that, but for most people, they're going to find themselves out of work, low income, but lots of time on their hands. So what do they do? They'll just eat. They'll become obese.
This is where the universal basic income people, and at the moment I'm more a fan of what I call guaranteed rather than universal, basic income.
Same as the dole.
But they say,
isn't it? What's the difference between, apart from the fact that the idea was everyone would get it? But I mean, it's just, in effect, it's
guaranteed means if you don't have a job, you get it. Universal means everybody gets it, whether you have a job or not, or you're Rupert Murdoch. It's got obvious inflationary impacts if you try to do it now, whereas a guaranteed one is like a fallback below a job guarantee and below actually having a job.
It's just the same as getting the dole.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, enough to do more than just, you know, barely pay your bills. Mm. I mean, I've had a couple of doses of unemployment in my life, and the money was barely, you know, my money was running down all the way through. Mm. One of them, I was trying to run a set of seminars between Australian and Chinese journalists, which I finally did, and another one on Australian and Southeast Asian journalists. So I was using it as the UBI advocates say, not to do nothing, but to do anything. Mm. Okay, and that's what you should need. People, and this is like the bullshit jobs people on Twitter and in David Graeber's work as well, are saying a lot of what we do is just wasteful. We should actually be doing what we regard as creative while still having enough money, income to stay alive. And the dilemma is we don't pay people enough in terms of what are now unemployment benefits to actually be able to do anything. They spend their time worrying about whether they can feed the kids. And you need a higher level of provision than that, which means more money, more income going to the powerless in society rather than the powerful.
But the tech bros who are controlling the world are not going to allow that to happen, are they? Because they will say, we need to give you just enough to survive so that you can buy our products and no more, because we don't want any independent thought. And that's the dystopian future, isn't it? But also, I mean, I wonder whether the kickback on all of this as well is that, I mean, imagine, I was thinking about this, supposing you wanted to go and see a concert, I don't know, a Tchaikovsky piano concerto or whatever, and you saw it there with the full orchestra and they're all human beings. Would that be a better, I mean, you know, with a very powerful sound, if they were all robots, you might have a just as powerful a sound with a flawless performance. Is that as good? Or do you go out feeling a bit cheated? I'd be thinking, well, actually, the main reason I'm there is it's like you see someone, like those videos you see of people playing the piano at, stations in London, or you're walking around and you see someone playing the piano. I mean, you are in awe half the time because of the talent of these people. You're not going to stand there and be in awe of a robot. But it's like an admiration of the ability of humans. And
and that's where artificial imagination matters more than artificial intelligence. Mm. To come up with a new chord, to have another way of playing a piece of music. There's some that can be done to some extent in a derivative way, but you can never invent a new style of music that way because without the capacity to imagine something that hasn't existed before, which humans have, and that's where consciousness comes in. We're not going to get that out of a robotic performance.
Yeah, and even if you were playing and you weren't, you know, deriving a new approach, but you were just flawlessly performing something the same way the computer could do, there's still that human connection coming through it all. And it's like if you go to a cafe and it's all going to be replaced by robots. Well, I choose which cafes I go to because I like the people who are running the cafe. It's that human connection, which I can understand why some of these tech bros might not get this. Because I can imagine they're not the most, you know, humanist people. I imagine probably they have a bit of difficulty in personal relationships. Judging by how many people Elon Musk has chewed through in his life, you'd have to say there's something going wrong there. So maybe they don't get this. And, so they don't understand. But, I mean, I wonder whether that's the ceiling to all of this as well. What can we do to stop that? Because I can't go to that cafe and have a chat with that person because they've been replaced by a robot. That part of my life is now empty.
And also you can't go to a cafe if you're Bob Dylan. Mm. If you've seen the recent Bob Dylan bio, which I highly recommend, by the way.
Yeah, no, I must go and see it.
Damn good. But the thing is, the tech billionaires can't go to the coffee shop. They don't even experience that. Yeah. Their coffee shop is one they own completely, and they've got subservient, whether they intend it or not, subservient staff rather than cheeky staff. So there's all sorts of ways in which our society perverts both extremes, rich and poor.
So my fear is that all of this human interaction will be taken away from us. We won't have very much money. We'll wonder what we do, and we will be all of those people. We know there's people sitting in bedrooms, getting obese, eating crisps, offering the most extreme views on social media because the whole reason for their living is to get as many likes or comments on their social media feed as possible. And they've discovered that the more radical they are, the more views they get.
The more obnoxious, yeah.
The more obnoxious.
I get it.
And therefore, you know, we all become like that. We just compete with each other to be the most way out there in terms of our radical views. And, you know, and we just spend our day spreading vile hatred, which human beings, if they're not there admiring, you know, the capability of humankind, you lock them away, they just become very insular and negative. And I just fear that's where society's going to go.
Back to the Hunger Games.
Back to the Hunger Games as well. I don't know how we we've got to have a solution, Steve, very quickly before we go. How do we stop that happening?
If we go through a catastrophe like World War II, and I think we will, come out the other side and say we can't behave this way anymore and lock it in this time rather than letting it be eroded by for power interests as they were when after World War II.
It's got to be brought to a head before it can be resolved, is what you're saying.
Yeah, we're going to get our own version of the Black Death. So let's just see what we can do in holding on society in the process,
right,
through that experience.
So what is it?
Equally charming thoughts.
Yeah. So I think it's Space Mint on YouTube. We've started putting on YouTube. This is on YouTube, by the way. We also started going back through the 400 and however many episodes, 450 back episodes as well.
Mm.
They're audio only, but we're starting to put those on. One of the early comments from one of those early episodes, which I think we must have been talking about something similar. Space Mint says, I go off grid as hunter gatherer angler sometimes, except the bloody soul is broken. But you know, you sort of quite, you know, I can understand that. Just get away from it all. But whether they'll, you know, and consume no energy whatsoever, you know, maybe that's where we'll get our sanity from. I like that comment. That seemed the only way to resolve this is, okay, cut yourself off totally. Go with a friend though when you go and do that. So you got, because we need friends. That's what human beings are all about. Anyway, there we are. Mm. Interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
Not particularly enlightening as always, but look, we'll have another one. Not enlightening. It was very enlightening, but it wasn't particularly optimistic, was it, really?
Uplifting. There's not a narrow vocabulary.
No. Yeah. There you go. See, a robot wouldn't have made that mistake. We'll see you next week. Thanks.
Okay, man. See you then. Bye.